This is Near FM
90.3. Good morning. We have Dr. Javad Kipur, a lecturer at Tallinn Technological University on energy and law.
Energy law and sustainability.
And he is also specialized on EU energy policy. Also, you have a degree in chemical engineering. Thank you very much for joining us. We are going to talk about EU energy policy and how the current war in Iran is impacting that. So what is the EU energy policy regarding oil, gas and sustainability, energy security and alternative energy sources and energy resilience?
Yeah, thank you for having me, and it's a pleasure to talk on this radio. The EU energy policy has evolved on the three bases: security of supply, sustainability, and competition. And for now, these two are very much involved. I mean, the security of supply and sustainability. Because in the recent years, especially after the Paris Agreement, we had this intention. The European Union wanted to reduce its carbon emission and reach to carbon neutrality by 2050. But since then, especially after 2019, then two very major outbreaks happened: COVID and the Russian full-scale invasion of Ukraine. And then our security of supply, especially on the later one, became very vulnerable. So while we tried to reduce our natural gas and oil dependence on Russian Federation, at the same time, we wanted to be faithful to the sustainability pillar of the EU energy policy and to reach or carbon neutrality by 2050. At some point, these two can make a synergy in between. The more renewable we get on board, the more presumably we can enhance our security of supply. But this is very conditionally. It really depends if we can actually lead a transition in our energy system, because, for instance, we need batteries, we need new wind farms, solar panels, we need to boost our level of energy efficiency, we need to involve more and more citizens into our energy system. I mean, using smart grids, smart meters, reducing the demand with the help of final consumers. So a lot of changes need to happen, and if it doesn't, then we may face with those vulnerabilities that can result in the security of supply being threatened, like what happened in Iberia Peninsula last year on 2025, that it resulted in a very massive blackout. And if then I can even connect it to the current situation, ongoing war, invasion of Israel and US to Iran, and we can also talk about the security of supply implications from that.
If we focus first on energy policy for our audience, even if we, or EU, uses alternative sources of energy, we can't eliminate fossil fuels, not just as energy source, but as byproducts of it. We depend on them, things from food to electric cars, batteries, sulfuric acid comes from the processing of oil, and many other, basically our contemporary societies depend on that, isn't it?
Yeah, that's very true, actually. And in the EU policymaking in the energy sector, we call them hardly abated carbon sector. So this means that this is not easy to decarbonize these sectors. For example, aviation, although we have had on a very technical and R&D research and development level, ideas how to, for example, fuel or airplanes with hydrogen, or I don't know if this is even a reliable idea even on the research and development level, to electrify the aviation sector. But we don't have alternative, strong alternative, reliable alternative, then it means that we have to use fossil fuels like oil and petroleum products in some sectors. But there is a criterion here asking us to offset carbon as much as it is released to the atmosphere. So in order to neutralize the carbon emission from those sectors that are difficult to be abated on their carbon footprint.
Yes, that's for our audience to be aware that it would be impossible to, at least to the current technological level of societies, to eliminate completely fossil fuels. About alternative sources of energy, we have some ecological ones and less so-called ecological ones. We have nuclear energy, and the call for nuclear energy has been coming back from the 20th century campaigns to try to remove completely atomic energy. But now it seems like it's coming back due to precisely the war between Russia and Ukraine, the problems of supply for electricity and other sources of energy that we dependent on gas and oil. So what is the situation regarding that in the EU?
That's also a very relevant hot topic these days, in a nutshell, because even from the legal perspective, EU member states, they have high independence in defining their direction and approach on designing their energy policy. Then we can distinguish the situation and policies of EU member states differ from one case to another. For example, we had Germany, who decided years ago to shut down its nuclear power plants. And then even after the Russian invasion of Ukraine, although there were some efforts and narratives asking for a review in such decision, but actually Germany continued in phasing out its nuclear energy. On the other side, we have some member states like France that has been persistently, they have been following their previous nuclear policies, and it seems that they won't change it significantly in the future. Of course, the same situation in the former EU member state, I mean the UK, was also like this. I mean, at some point there were some requests for phasing out nuclear, but it is evident now that this is not gonna happen, and even they think about keeping and maintaining their nuclear capacity or even boosting that. And on the other side, I can also add some member states like Estonia, who are actively thinking about establishing their first small nuclear power plant. And at the end of the day, there is this intention and tendency for applying, having some small modular nuclear reactor, the SMR. This is more or less on the edge of the nuclear technology. These are small nuclear power plants that you can have them for producing a lower level of electricity, because you know that generally nuclear power plants are designed and installed in bigger capacities. The point is that nuclear energy, nuclear power plants, they can provide us with base load electricity, meaning that they are very reliable and they can provide us a constant level of electricity output all through the day, all through the year. And this makes them very appropriate for some applications that actually make them very difficult to be circumvented and being phased out just because we don't. We have some concern about the safety, for instance.
Yeah, so the attitude might have been changed by precisely these two recent wars, the Ukraine, Russia, and US, Israel against Iran regarding atomic energy.
That's true. But about the ongoing US Israel invasion of Iran, I
Have they?
think
Sorry,
the implication.
they haven't invaded yet. They've been attacking, but they haven't put boots on the ground yet, have they?
Well, that's true, but I mean, legally speaking, this is an invasion, regardless if it has been on the ground or not. We can call it an invasion,
Okay,
and
could you explain a bit more that? Because that is aggression, but this invasion doesn't mean only Boots on the ground?
Not necessarily. We have the legal definition about aggression. This
Yes.
needs to be discussed, and then we need to, some international authorities finally can decide either this was aggression or not, which I think it is. But at least we can say that now we have an armed conflict, and
yes.
This is an ongoing armed conflict there, and I call it an invasion as well.
Okay,
so,
they have invaded the aerial space.
Airspace and
yeah.
also the maritime space.
The maritime space,
both.
Yeah.
So at least from land, maritime,
yes.
On the sea, land, and the airspace, two of them have been violated significantly,
yes.
and many casualties among the citizens and
mm-hmm.
infrastructure, etc.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And considering the retaliatory actions adopted by Iran against those who are attacking them, obviously from Israel there are attacks, from US interests in the region there are attacks, but to others' infrastructure this is also debatable. So at the end I consider this as an armed conflict. I think this is no question on this. So back to our main argument, when it comes to the nuclear energy, because generally nuclear power plant need huge review and like evaluation and assessment in different aspects from the environmental perspective and also economic perspective. I don't see very significant impact from the ongoing war in the Middle East coming on the nuclear decision by the European Union member states, because more or less I think many people expect that this war would not last for like years or so. It will be ended sooner or later. But at the end, this shows that how much vulnerable we are in the European Union to energy import and or energy security. And this is not a new phenomenon, because we have seen that, we have felt that since the first oil shock, and then in more recently like 2006 and 2009, and then in current war between Russia and Ukraine. So I think the most significant impact from this war or security of supply is pointed to oil and petroleum products in one side, and other side, which I think is more even important, is our natural gas.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because we decided to cut off Russian gas, even though we haven't cut it 100%, because a few member states they are importing through the pipeline, and then some others by LNG from Russia. But we want to cut it by the end of this decade. On the other side, there have been two major alternatives for us. First and foremost, the United States and also Qatar. We know that Qatar LNG, its capacity has been reduced because the Strait of Hormuz, while we are talking today in early March, it's still unofficially closed because Iran did not close it in a way, if we say it's a hot closure yet, but because of the risk premium and the high risk of passing through the Strait, ships are standing in a queue, and it includes both oil tankers or carriers or LNG carriers also.
Mm-hmm.
And part of our LNG comes from Qatar, then it means that our security of gas supply is right now under danger, especially because of the time.
I wanted to get into that because there's been some news on apparently the UK had only 2 days of gas reserve. I don't know exactly how much has Ireland, but we know that most of the gas is coming from pipelines from the UK. So the rest of Europe, how much gas reserve is there? You were going to talk about the seasonality of it.
Yeah, that's true. And member states by member state, it differs, especially because not all the member states, they have underground gas storage facilities. For example, among the Baltic states, Latvia, Estonia, Lithuania, it is only Latvia who has these facilities, and they store natural gas there, and then they share it with other Baltic states.
Yeah, in Ireland,
so it depends.
Yeah, in Ireland there was some policy that I don't know how far it's been done, but creating an offshore facility, actually storing the liquefied natural gas on a huge boat beside the pipeline coming from the UK.
Yeah, that can be also the case, but more specifically I'm talking about underground gas storage facilities that we have legal obligations for filling them in. And generally by March, everyone has already depleted their facilities and they are starting to enter to the filling in season, and we are in our least level of stored natural gas, which makes us very vulnerable to any sort of volatility into the LNG market, and that's quite significant. And also at the same time, we know that this natural gas is needed, among other things, for the chemical factories, including the fertilizers, for example. And then if the price of natural gas goes up, it impacts the outcome of these, the products of these factories, like the fertilizers. And then this is very much interconnected with our security of food supply.
Production as well, yes. The domino effect.
And yeah, this is a domino effect. And then again, we can talk about other goods as well, like aluminium, like, you know, metal, even some goods. And then at the end, we reach to oil and petroleum products as well. The point is that this war has been extending to the energy infrastructure, unfortunately. So a few days ago, Israel attacked, according to the records, 30 strategic petroleum product reserves in Iran, and that was a huge catastrophe environmentally in particular, and even from the human perspective and casualties. And then Iran also started to retaliate at some point. Even that's very unfortunate that they attacked the desalination facilities in the south of Iran, in the island that is called Qishm, in the Persian Gulf. So at the end of the day, I want to make this point that this war seems to be extending to the infrastructures, including, most importantly, energy, which impacts the oil price. Yesterday, when the oil markets started working, the oil price reached for a few minutes and hours to 120 for the first time in the last 4 years almost, and then it got back because of some decision. But anyway, it seems that there is not a very bright future, at least in the short term, and all this price fluctuation would impact definitely our security of supply, because security of supply is not just about continuity of providing oil, but also it is relevant to the affordability of energy, especially the price of petroleum products, which I think everyone has felt it in the gas stations these days, how actually the price is going up.
And is there any amount of oil reserve that European countries have, similar to the gas?
Yes, actually G7, this group of seven industrial countries, they decided to release part of their strategic reserves, which actually impacted the oil price.
That was yesterday, wasn't it?
Yesterday, true. Yeah. In addition to some decisions and declaration of some European member states who wanted to deploy their, for example, navies to protect the navigation in the region. We don't know actually if this will materialize or not. That's another story. But anyway, these all these factors, they had some impact on reducing the oil price. Right now, for today, I think Brent oil should be something around $90-$91 compared to this $118 per barrel that yesterday we saw. But we see how much oil is very much extensively involved into the war strategy by Iran and by the enemies on the other side.
How much supply do we have in Europe?
Yes, there is actually the legal obligation that the European Union adopted, especially considering the experience of the first and second oil shock, that we have to store for 60 days of oil consumption or 90 days, 91 day of oil import. So each of them. And this means that about the continuity of the supply, at least for like this amount of days, we should not have major concern, but there are two major concerns. First of all, when it comes to what I already talked, I mean, this G7 decision, they cannot be released all of a sudden and as a whole to be injected into the market in order to relieve us from all these concerns. They will be, I mean, because of the technical limitations, they will be released very gradually. And generally, their impact is for only for short term, because then the market will realize that still we have the shortage and concerns over the, for example, in this case, the Strait of Hormuz. And then, for the midterm, long term in particular, we may find ourselves very much unequipped to tackle and solve the price and continuity issue.
Yeah, especially because, as you said, it hasn't been just about the traffic through the Gulf due to the conflict, but also because the oil processing facilities have been bombarded, which means that even if extraction starts again, those facilities for processing and extraction as well, they have to be rebuilt. And that is going to take some time. So the supply wouldn't come back to the market as it was before when the war stops.
That is true. And even we know some of the major oil producer in the Middle East, from Iraq to Kuwait, they have reduced intentionally production level from some specific oil fields. And you know that because of technical considerations, the oil field is not like, turning on computer or turning it off, click and a button. So when you decide to reduce, if it is because of the force majeure, turning this back into the operation with its full capacity is actually time consuming. It cannot be in a blink of eye. What makes us even more worried is that if the tension is exacerbated in a way that Iran approaches and takes this decision for hot closure of the Strait of Hormuz, what I call it, the hot closure, meaning that if some military conflicts come up into the Persian Gulf, I mean, between Iranian Navy and very asymmetric force there on one side, and then the US and allies there, and if Iran releases maritime mines on, then who knows how long does it take to clean Persian Gulf from these mines to provide security for the oil tankers. Because Persian Gulf is very narrow, and you cannot risk by going with these huge oil tankers, very explosive or LNGs, and be sure that everything would be resumed in the short run. And I think this is the situation that everyone is trying to avoid. But I think at some point, which should be very soon, the market, I mean, the actors should. The political actors should make the decision about how to ensure the security of oil supply from the Persian Gulf outside. You cannot stay there forever, and this will come up.
Just very quickly, a couple of questions. One of them, could any other oil-producing countries, I'm thinking about Nigeria, I'm thinking about the US, Mexico, Venezuela, other sources, substitute the production that comes from the Middle East now in conflict?
A short answer is no, in particular in the short term, because we have had the US capacity already on. And for Venezuela, as you mentioned, the best scenario probably takes like 2, 3 years. I mean, I'm talking on a very best scenario to have it double, for example, or back to its golden time. It takes much, much more time and investment.
And also the kind of oil is different. The quality and the index oil is not exchangeable, really.
Yeah, it is at some point different. And this is actually also a determining factor. Less less than the past. Like, for example, when we were talking about imposing sanction against Iran oil in 2011 and 2012, things have changed and then refineries are more complicated. But still, this is true. I mean, you cannot replace the U.S. oil with Russian oil easily. Like, it depends on the grade of the oil and the API.
Another issue is that at the international level, this war has different layers. The US, Israel against Iran, different layers, the regional, local, and there has more international aspect of it. And it seems like a kind of a pressure for the next forthcoming meeting between the US and China, the two presidents. How could that influence that meeting?
Well, I think if we see the whole situation in a very broader, grand strategy, what you said makes absolutely sense, because China and the U.S. president's meeting has been already set for like mid or maybe second half of March. And I assume that Trump started this war assuming that he could finish it before this meeting, and then on the table, on the negotiation table, he would have two very major measures and leverages against China, which could be Iran and Venezuela. In a way, that he had already finished the Venezuela issue, and time to time he talks about how he has upper hand there. And then we know how much actually these two were important within the oil market for China.
How much was the percentage of imports from Venezuela and Iran to China?
Well, except a very slight portion of Venezuelan oil being produced and taken by American companies.
Before that?
I think more or less something like less than 1 million per day, 1 million barrels per day, used to go to China. And about Iran, the statistics are officially known as confidential. But, you know, if you analyze the market and if you do the calculation, you can find something more or less, again, I would say 2 million barrels of oil going to China. Because we know that actually from Iran, 99%, if not the whole 100%, goes to China.
But from China's consumption, what is the percentage of Iran's oil and Venezuelan oil to China?
Well, I have not the exact number right now in my mind, but if we assume that from Iran it's like 2 million more or less, and then half of that from Venezuela, I'm not sure. I need to check.
We have just 2 minutes left, and I would like to ask you the two main challenges for Ireland as president of the European Union, energy-wise. I suppose that the war now, and it would be energy security. What do you think?
Yeah, I think preparing for reducing our vulnerability on the energy security, which means that we need resilience. And I'm really emphasizing on this key word that is the golden word. Resilience and resilience and resilience. So to and at the same time, we want to follow our dream situation, dream ideal form of energy supply, which is very much compatible with fully decarbonized system in 2050. That makes our mission very tough.
Thank you very much, Dr. Javed Kapoor.
Thank you. Thank you. My pleasure.
This is Near FM
90.3.